You are listening to the Hello Sport Podcast.
Punters and dribblers, welcome back to another episode of Hello Sport, the home of unqualified opinion and unwavering bias. This is comfortably the biggest guest we've ever had.
It's a high watermark, Tom, in the history of the podcast.
Yep.
It's not even close, really.
No.
No offense to everyone else.
Listen, we love everyone else, but like everyone else would look at this gentleman and be like, well, this is a fucking ornament to just Australia.
Everyone gets it.
Everyone gets it. We're dealing with an ornament here.
Yeah.
And very ornaments, rarely do you get ornaments.
Mate, rarely.
Yeah.
Rare as hen's teeth, ornaments.
Yeah.
That's why they're ornaments.
Living legend. A legend who's alive.
But we just so happen to have wrangled an ornament, Tom.
Yeah. Now, I don't know this, but I'm going to say it. Only podcast he's ever done.
Look, if he's done other podcasts,
no one's heard of him.
No one cares. This is the only podcast worth mentioning. We're going to call it the first.
The one and only Ray Rabs Warren, the greatest commentator of all time, the king, the king, the king. We got to mention that Friday night, I think it's about 7 p.m., there's a documentary about his life, an ode to Rabs, basically on Channel 9. It is called Ray Warren Calling Time.
Correct.
Calling Time, Ray Warren. A lot of people who have had something to do with his career speak in it. Obviously, all his old footy mates, like the commentators. My old man, funnily enough, is also in there. And a bunch of other people have heard that it's fantastic. So make sure you go and check that out. It was a great honour and a great privilege, Eddie. This was one of those ones we walked out of there going like,
oh, that was cool. That was cool. He's just terrific, Tom.
Just a good man. Let's not waste any more of your time. Let's get into it. The one and only Ray Rabbits Warren, baby.
What are you calling yourself, Tommy?
Nah, just Tom. Tom. Yeah, yeah.
Tombo.
Nah, let's not do that.
Did you get married?
I did. I did. Got two babies as well. Two girls.
Oh, really?
Yep.
How long did that take?
Mate, not long at all.
Really?
Mate, well... found out I was pregnant before we got engaged, but it was all in the works. Thank God her mum knew that I was intended. I'd asked her mum for permission and then we found
you were
out
lucky.
We were pregnant. I was very lucky, skin of my teeth sort of stuff.
Yeah. It's happened before, Tom.
And it'll happen again.
It will happen again. Can you hear yourself in there, Rat?
Yeah.
And the volume's all good?
Yeah, it's enough.
You know, it's enough?
You know I work loud, but this is okay.
You can put it up a bit more if you want.
Yeah, fine, yeah. I'm paying the penalty these days because I've gone quite deaf in the right ear.
Oh, really?
Mm.
How long into the career did that happen?
What, the deafness?
Yeah.
Oh, I deserve to be going deaf. I deserve to be going deaf about 25, 35 years ago.
Right.
Because I've always worked very loud. Only because it helped me get my modulation and the tempo. I mean, but if you put a pair of headphones on and they're like jackhammer headphones where you can't hear anything, then you go hoarse in the throat and it gets very painful. So the louder in the ears, the better I performed, I think.
So you're going louder because you don't realise how loud you are?
Probably, yeah. It's a bit like any entertainer, though, the foldback at the front of the stage.
Yep.
I mean, you'll notice they'll be doing this sort of thing, turning their volume up because they too want to hear themselves coming back.
I played in a band once, Rab, so I do understand the
foldback. Do you?
Yeah, well, not anymore.
He was a drummer.
I was a drummer.
A drummer of
note. I had very little to do, actually, with the foldback. But I like to. Right.
So the band is now defunct?
the band's defunct, unfortunately. Okay. It's gone the way of... the cassette.
Yeah, that's right.
Mate, how are you enjoying the retirement, you know?
Not very much.
No?
No, I knew it was coming, though. You know, I mean, you have to realise that there are some things that are inevitable. And I'm in my 80th year on the planet, and I had to retire sooner or later, even though my biggest fear, I hadn't reached that, I don't think, and that was I didn't want to undo whatever good I've done, both for the game and myself and my family. You know, I didn't want to undo the good by going one step too far. And I knew that moment couldn't be too far down the avenue, but I hadn't quite reached it. So I thought, I'll pull the pin now, this was mid-off season, after the 21 grand final between South and Penrith. I was comfortable with that, and I thought, that'll do, I'll give it a miss. But I wasn't going to announce it until I'd sat down and watched for about 6 weeks the first six rounds of this year. And I was able to get through that.
Why was that? Why was you waiting for the first six rounds?
I just wanted to see whether or not I could be a viewer and not a broadcaster.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did you have a strong feeling in the 21 grand final that would be your last?
No, I didn't. But I've got to tell you, Ed, that we were broadcasting a lot from the studio, and I'd never done that before. All of the younger commentators, it was basically second nature. They've been born and bred on it. But I had never done it because I always wanted to be at the game and able to hear the crowd and get my own light and shade from what the crowd are telling me. This is exciting. This is not. Up, down. So here I am in a studio, and all that's there are a few cameramen and a few commentators, and we're watching it on a screen. And it was pretty nerve-wracking for somebody my age who hadn't done it before. But I'd got through three origins, and then I tackled the grand final, and I came away, this is all after the event, I came away feeling comfortable and happy.
Mm.
And I'd also conquered one of my great fears, having to work off the tube. So then in the following few months, I thought, I've really had a happy year, a comfortable year. I think I might call it quits. But then I wanted to watch for 6 weeks, if it was 6 weeks, what it was like to be a viewer and not a commentator.
Was there a sense of nostalgia for you, like calling it off the TV instead of being at the ground, almost as if that's the way commentary's gone now, and that, you know, the old school way of commentating with the binoculars and the window open and the crowd is sort of a thing of the past?
Where'd you learn that from?
We were talking to Ray Hadley.
Yeah. Well, Bolts, he knows exactly what I'm talking about. Mm. You know, that was the normal, you know. I started out sitting on the sideline at a card table with a deck chair. And Frank Hyde would be on my right and Tiger Black on my left with John O'Reilly and Cole Pearce and... you know, you needed binoculars to actually broadcast. You were down on ground level where elevation is absolutely beautiful in commentary, no matter what the sport, whatever the event. But I understand where you're coming from. Suddenly, telecasters, they knew they could save a lot of money. No airfares, no accommodation. We'll get them to call it off the tube. You know, Olympic Games, a lot of that comes out of, say, Melbourne or Brisbane or Sydney, with a commentator sitting in a booth somewhere 13,000 miles away from the Olympic Games. Mm. It's been going on for a while, but this poor old bloke, I'd never had to do it. And it was probably the final hurdle that I was happy to jump. Yeah, that's the best way to put it.
I thought you would have enjoyed not having to fly.
Well, yeah, actually, you know, I could have gone to 100. had I have known that it wasn't that bloody hard. I mean, you know me pretty well, Tommy. You know, I get quite nervy, and I apologise for that. But had I have known it was that simple... and convenient and comfortable for me, because I hate flying. You know, I think Qantas hates me because I keep saying it. But, yeah, I could have gone, I think, till I was 100.
Mm.
But inevitably, one of two things would have happened. One, I would have dropped dead. Or two, I would have undone whatever good I might have done.
And so that fear you speak of, is that sort of just not being able to reach the heights that you'd once reached, or that you'd sort of mispronounce names or get the call wrong? Was that the general fear that you had?
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to mention names, but I worked on...
I reckon we can work out a couple.
I don't think you can, because they're quite quite aged people.
Oh, okay.
But a couple I worked alongside, they were getting names wrong. I'm talking horse racing and football.
Okay, sorry. I thought you were talking players' names who were a mouthful.
Like, I'll come to that. But, you know, I'm talking about all the sports that I've covered. And horse racing was one of them. Mm-hmm. Swimming was another. And at the end of the day, I just was worried about, calling Ed Tom and Tom Ed. Mm. And not knowing. It's all very well to make a mistake. Let me tell you something. You're in for a career, both of you, obviously. Well, I hope so.
But so do I.
to make a mistake and not knowing you made the mistake, that's the problem. To make a mistake and be able to apologize, that's not a problem. Mm. So that was my fear. Going to work and perhaps calling Peter Sterling Paul Taylor for the entire match.
Yeah.
Or like Sterlo did one day, he thought Rod Wishart playing for Illawarra was Rod Stewart. And I had to jump all over him. I said, yeah, and that's Maggie May sitting out the front of the broadcast box, you know. But he knew when I told him that he'd made a mistake, and oh my God, talk about Peter Perfect. He really bashed himself up over that. But I love to remind him, you know. Yeah, I said, Wishart, he scores a beautiful try down in that northeastern corner. And Sterling does the first replay, you know. And he said, that's incredible by Rod Stewart. And I said, yeah.
Have you got any of those, any howlers that you've had over the years where you've been like, oh, my God.
Oh, well, I can be – I won't go into it too deeply. I remember a bloke called Hunt. Carmichael didn't help my career.
Yeah, Carmichael got a few people, I think, over his career. Yeah.
I think he might have.
Do you have a we were talking about this before, like, do you have a moment that you think you nailed the best, the moment where it called for you to absolutely deliver from a commentary perspective that you just came away going like, yes, nailed it?
Well, I hope I wouldn't do that. I'd like to think I've got a bit of humility about myself. You know, I know a couple of people that are like that. You know, but I guess I've got to go back to that Mark Coyne try, the miracle try. I was just lucky. Here I am. It's a minute to go, I think, in an Origin match, and the ball sweeps across the park and then sweeps back, and it's gone through 11 sets of hands, and you get them all right. You know you've got them all right. I haven't mispronounced one. I've called the whole lot of them, and then there we are.
Mm.
And it's a miracle.
So obviously, yeah, I agree. You're not the type to, you know, shoot fake pistols out of your hands and you do something good. But there must be a level of, like, satisfaction when you come away from a moment like that. You know?
Oh, yeah, no, huge. You feel good inside, but you don't sort of
dwell on it.
No, you don't stand in the back of the utility and, you know, and go, hey.
Yeah.
Wait, how much work would you put into, I think, sort of setting the foundations to make a call like that, do you think? Like, is it sort of, how much would you work on honing your craft away from TV or broadcasting?
Not very much, really. I'd done most of my impersonating and pretending and practicing from the age of 7 or 8 until I actually got asked, can you broadcast football? We need a football commentator. And I said, yeah, I can call football, which was a total lie. You know, I'd never call football in my life. And this fellow gave me a job on a radio station, God love them, 2LF Young. And my first match was Bar Medman versus West Wylong. And I'd never seen any of them. And I'd never called a football match. But he didn't know that. So he gave me the job. And that's how it all started.
Wow.
Were you calling off the program? How do you know their names?
Well, no, it's very I'll be honest with you. I'll just fess up a little bit. Mm. I drove to Bar Medman from Young, and people that live down there would know that's a fair trip, on corrugated gravel, On Tuesday night, I did that to Barm Edmund. Thursday night, I did it to West Wylong. So I had some idea of who they were. But if you think you can call from numbers, you've got another thing coming. Because when they're running towards you,
you're in big trouble.
You can't see the number.
That's a good point.
So you can't call from numbers. You can when they're running away from you, but it just so happens in life, Ed, sometimes they're running towards you.
That's right.
And that's why I would always say with the Morris twins or the Burgess twins, you just can't identify them accurately. And then I found that the twins, Morris, the twins Morris, one was wearing Adidas and the other one was wearing Asics, I fancy. So I actually called them off their boots. It's true. Seriously.
Would you ever put a request in to the Morris brothers if you found out they were wearing the same coloured boots?
Just, yeah. Well, this is probably not the right time to mention this, but Chris and Paul Dawson. Chris yes. and Paul Dawson yes. at Newtown. Mm. I took with me, when I was doing Newtown games on radio, of course, I would take a reel of blue electrician's tape and a reel of white. And I'd ask one of them to put the white on and the other to put the blue on around here to tie your ears down. And they did exactly that to me. So for the entire match, I got them wrong. The bloke that was supposed to be blue, he was white, and the white was blue. So they got me. They got me good.
Punters and Dribblers, I am really, really excited to talk to you about the number one betting platform on planet Earth, our good friends at Ned's. You know it to be true. We did a live show in their honour on Friday at Magic Round.
Jeez, it was fun.
It was so much fun, and it was great to see the great people of Ned's there. It was great to see punters like-minded as we are come together through the power of Ned's, Eddie. It was also great to get a couple of bets on the weekend.
Just the one for me, mate, but it was a biggie. It was a thickie. Did you get a couple, did you?
Well, I got one for the show, one in my civilian life. My civilian life, often better, it would seem.
Often better, it would seem. Listen, punters and dribblers, you know the drill. If you want to punt on some rugby league this weekend, Ned's is the place to do it. Same game multis out the wazoo. You got same game multis on AFL too, if that's your poison. A bit weird, but you could do it if you wanted to. Yeah. I think the Waz won on the weekend. Maybe you want to punt on the Waz, get some value, do that at Ned's. You know?
So look, you can follow along on all our profiles on the Ned's app. You can jump in the About Even group. The code's Dribbler. That's where you can interact with us. But just get around Ned's because they get around us. So let's get around people that get around us, get around each other. You know what I mean?
Completely agree. Now, you win some, you lose more. For free and confidential support, visit gamblinghelponline.org.au.
Punters and Dribblers, Big Day Rosé, May sale, $50 off every case if you use the code MANLY.
It's just a layup.
Yeah.
It's just a layup from two generous podcasters.
That's it. You get six bottles of Big Day Rosé for $100 dues. That's $50 off.
Code MANLY. Capitalization not important.
But
HelloSport.shop.
It is important that you capitalize on the opportunity.
HelloSport.shop.
Do you have an era of rugby league that you enjoyed the most commentating? Well, I guess maybe like players or where the game was a certain way. Is there an era that sticks out to you as the one you enjoyed the most?
An era?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the one I finished on, really. That's one thing I guess I'm happy about. I know I'm of a dinosaural age, but I'm not one of those people that longs for the old days of football. I understand the legalities involved if directors and commissioners don't realise they have a duty. They have a duty to try and protect players from injuries that they can protect them from to a degree. And as a result of that, the game has become faster. They are more athletic. They are professional these days, in fairness to the old brigade. The old brigade would go and have five schooners on their way home from training. So these fellows are just super fit. They're super athletes. What they do to score tries is incredible. given that the corner post is not even important anymore. But how many tries would Ken Irvine have scored if the corner post hadn't have been in play? Mm. But I'm digressing there.
Do you ever find, just when you are watching it at home now, that you slip into a bit of commentary, like just as a reaction if something crazy happens? Not as in calling it, but just like the, you know, you're like, oh!
No. I understand the... thank you, Billy, for the question. Yeah.
Well, we'll get to that.
Had a bit of Billy about it. Yeah. Bloody Billy.
we may as well touch on Bill, on Dad. What was it like having someone, you know, take the piss out of you, or, you know, imitate you in that sort of... Was he famous by the time he started knocking you off? Because he'd said to me that you guys actually knew each other earlier on. You met at a radio station or something.
When you say knocking me off, can you just clarify what you mean?
Yeah, what do you mean, man?
Impersonating you on the...
impersonating his brother a lot of the time.
That's true.
Well, yeah, he had three brothers or four brothers, and then he invented a brother that didn't exist, but he wanted the world to think that we had a fourth brother outside of Bob and Jack and Ray that the family didn't recognise. In other words, he was the black sheep of the family, and he kept harping on this. And then one day on radio, you were involved in this. You were producing, and when I got in the car, he'd been on the show and he'd been talking about Rick, which Rick didn't exist, you know. And when I got in the car, the phone rang. It was him, and he was quite old at the time. You know, he was certainly in his 80s, and he said, "I didn't know we had another brother." I said, "Jack," I said, the bloke is an impersonator, a bit of a dickhead," and I said, "There is no Rick. There are just the three of us, me, Bob, and you. So please rest." He said, "Yeah, but he's degrading and embarrassing the family, you know, mom and dad and everybody." I said, "Well, mate, I repeat, he's an impersonator comedian." Yeah. So I said, "Please don't worry about him."
Yeah. That's so funny. What do you give his impersonation out of 10?
Oh, probably up around the 8 or 9.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah. It's pretty good.
He's very good. Yeah. The only bloke that I've heard probably better than him is my son, Mark. He's got me down to a T. I mean, I might be supposed to be doing a commercial for somebody and I can't make it. So he does the commercials.
Yeah. Well,
I'm sort of joking there, but
it's not. It's fine. Look, it's our little secret.
Yeah. We can cut that bit out. How did you get the job? Well, not get the job. How did you get to do the voice on Bluey? I was sitting there watching it with my daughter during Origin period, and I was like, "Bloody Rabs in there."
Yeah, that's right. It reminds me, the first job I did for Channel 9 were the Greyhounds at Wentworth Park and Harold Park. It was a show here called British Comedy Gone to the Dogs. And that was my first job on Channel 9 that I remember. And the last show I did, the last thing I did on television, was also with the Dogs, the Blue Heeler in Bluey. I didn't even know, I'd never heard of Bluey.
Oh, God, Bluey's huge.
But absolutely massive. It's won an Emmy Awards or whatever. I don't know what it's won. But Mark, he found them, or they found him, I'm not sure. And he said, they want to... give you the mountainous amount of money to do it. I said, "How much?" He said, "About $99, you know. And I said, "Oh, mate, we've got to get more than that for it." But I know that sounds mercenary, but... And then Cher, my wife, she stepped in and she said, "The little fella, that's Holly's boy, Mateo, they live with us." And she said, "You've got to do it." She said, "Mateo watches it all the time." Mm. So I said to Marcus, "See if you can get another dollar out of him, will you? Make it 100. Because I'd just gotten used to getting, I got out on 99 with Origin, so I thought if we can get 100 for doing Bluey, but no, seriously.
You speak of getting out on 99 Origins. Ray Hadley is of the opinion he's going to get to 100.
And then retire.
And then retire. How do you feel about that?
Doesn't worry me. Doesn't worry me at all. I would probably expect that he would be pretty close to it. I think he started in 87, I think, which would be a couple of years before me anyway, because I didn't do an Origin for Channel 9 until 89. Mm. Yeah, 89. So he probably would, he'll get to the 100 easily, yeah.
On Origin, would you prefer to call that or a grand final in terms of energy and...
No, I love grand finals, yeah, I do. I love grand finals. The trouble with Origin, I guess, is that you don't know sometimes when you go to work, you don't know that, you know, is this a decider? Mm-hmm. You think about game two. Game two is super value because you don't know whether you're going to watch a decider or not. Yeah. If you think about it, you might have won game one. Mm. And if you win game two, that's it. That's the series.
Interesting.
Have you got it? Which one's your favourite grand final? There are two, which I imagine, like the, I think it's...
Is it 87?
No, it's Manly and then the Cowboys, Broncos one where like they were really close.
Oh, yeah, see, I was in the wilderness for about 5 years. I was, if you like, supplanted by Rex back in 86, after the 86 grand final, and I was out of play for 5 years. So I've got to tell you that because I can't talk to you about the 87 Fatty's grand final. Mm. I can't talk about 88, 89, 90, 91 because I just wasn't interested. You know, I'd lost interest because I was downcast. Mm. I therefore would think the one that was the most entertaining I've done would be the 2015. Mm. And I'm talking about particularly the last 3 minutes. I mean, that had everything. Felt scores in the corner, levels. Thurston hits the uprights, bounces away, golden point. They kick off. Ben Hunt drops the ball. I've never felt so sorry for a bloke in all my life. I thought, oh, my God, you poor bugger. And then on the fourth play, Jonathan just goes bang, and there it is, and he takes the premiership. Yeah.
Again, another moment you nailed, you know, like that commentary. That's like a really famous piece that's replayed over and over and over again.
Yeah, well, I'm proud of that, you know, because you're right. Yeah, I was lucky enough to nail that. Yeah.
That was incredible. Now that you're retired, are you prepared to admit that you're an Eels fan?
There was a period I followed the Eels, but you got to cut me some slack. When I came from Young, I went to 2GB, and we bought a little house at Seven Hills. Then we moved up. We thought we were moving right up. We went to Northmead, and then we went from Northmead to Castle Hill. So I've lived in the Parramatta area all my Sydney life. So you've got to know that. Mm. And then a young bloke, Chris, he got involved with the SG Ball at Parramatta, and they went on to win the SG Ball. He won the Commonwealth Bank Cup playing for Parramatta Maras. There was a lot of Parramatta going on in our world, in our life. Mm. But when it came time for grading back in those days, you know, you're talking first grade, second grade, third grade, or maybe first grade, reserve grade, under 21, something like that. Parramatta didn't want him, or should I say they didn't need him. And he went to Western Suburbs with a lot of other kids from Parramatta. He went to Western Suburbs Magpies, not West Tigers. And I then found myself going with him to watch him play for Western Suburbs. And it was then that I realised, hang on, I'm not a true Eels supporter. The first time Western Suburbs played Parramatta, I was barracking for Western Suburbs with all of my vigour. and then he went with the first Pioneers to the Western Reds. So then I found myself trying to watch the Western Reds and with all my vigour again, but it was hard. It was hard to get them on television from memory. I don't know whether Fox were doing all the games. I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
Can't remember the Western Reds.
So that's the story about Parramatta. But at the end of the day, I was living in their territory.
I became
very good friends with Peter and Peter Wynn and Arthur Beetson and Bob O'Reilly and all those people. Yeah, I admit to that.
Would you be going for him this weekend?
Not really, because I've learnt since that rumour became popular that Eddie's talking about. I basically tried desperately after all of that just to be down the middle.
Mm.
Just down the middle. And it aggravates me when I get told that, oh, you're biased towards Parramatta or you're biased towards New South Wales. That's a load of baloney.
Mm.
Just a load of baloney.
Well, I must admit, I've never noticed any bias.
No.
Other than that rumour, which I thought I'd
follow
up. Well,
we'd heard the rumour, but no bias.
No.
We just heard you talking before we did this with Mike, and you were talking about Kerry Packer and those sort of days. What was Kerry like?
I don't know. I don't know. I wasn't frightened of him, but I think the word is I was intimidated. Mm. I'd heard all these stories about he could be gruff, you know, and I was a bit intimidated, you know, and somewhere along the line, somebody said that I can't remember what the conversation was, but I went through life thinking that he didn't like me. He'd come to the canteen, our mobile canteen, and I'd find a way to go missing.
Okay.
He never ever came into the commentary box, not that I remember.
Okay.
So I was dreaming of somebody not liking me, and I don't like that. You know, if you don't like me, that's okay. But if you don't know me, why don't you just want to be friends? But
yeah.
Look, we're talking about the great Kerry Packer. I admire him unbelievably, and I still do. And then John Cornell, after Kerry had passed on, I said to John, I don't think he liked me that much. And John said, you're kidding. He said, he loved you. I said, shivers. What a mistake. What a mistake. I went to the wedding, actually. I went to James and Jody's wedding.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you really didn't get to, you didn't have much to do with him over
that,
there.
That was, I was just going to say that that's the only time I ever shook hands with him, and I don't think he knew he was shaking hands with me, because we're filing into the wedding, and you met the bridal group, James and Jody and Kerry and Roz, and everybody had been delivered by limousines, and it was piddling down. It was bucketing down. And they're all under umbrellas and they're getting wet. Where by now, we're in the foyer. And I introduced Cher to Roz, and she said, Ray, I know. That's right. When she came up, Roz said to Cher, hello, Cher, how are you? And I said, how did you know Cher's name? And she said, I've been doing the invitations for about 6 years or something like that. And with that, I then put my hand out to shake hands with Kerry. And he was shaking my hand, but he's looking over the top of Cher's head and says to Roz, Roz, you can't keep talking to everybody. They're out there getting drowned, the poor buggers. So then he ushered me with the other hand under his armpit into the next lobby. So I think that was the only time I've ever shaken hands with them.
So that did nothing for your concerns about whether he liked you or not when he's just sort of pushing you.
We can't be sure.
No, we can't be sure.
No.
When did you start to feel, how long into your commentary career did you start to feel like, I don't know, I guess maybe comfortable? Did you, or was it something that you never felt comfortable in it? You know, you're such a household name now. Was there a tipping point or a moment where you were like, you know, it sort of sunk in?
Sunk in what?
I guess just like your place in Australian society or like the cultural rugby league.
Part of the fabric.
Thank you, Edward.
I think there's a combination of things there. The Hall of Fame, that sort of convinced me that I must have done something right, because nobody from the press or the radio or television had been admitted or inducted to the Rugby League Hall of Fame. That was something that I think probably said to me, well, you've just about done it, you know, what's left now? Because along the trail, there's been media hall of fame at the Sydney Cricket Ground, broadcast centre at Allianz Stadium, named after me, statue at Junee, Order of Australia, and then Hall of Fame. I might have forgotten something there that... the
knighthood?
The honour roll. No, not yet. The honour roll at Men of League. All of those things, they made an imprint on me. Make no mistake about that. Mm. You know, I was so proud. But it had to be the combination of things. And you say, geez, there's not much left to do, is there?
Mm. Do you miss your mates, Fatty, Sterlo and Gus? Do you catch up? Have you caught up with them?
No, not really, Tom. You've got to understand, I'm in my 80th year and they're sort of a generation behind me. Mm. So we haven't got a lot in common, I've got to tell you. You know, Fatty, you've got more chance of finding him on a golf course than at home. Gus is fairly intense. I mean, don't get
not
me
breaking
wrong.
You, yeah.
I think he's the greatest rugby league brain in the world. But I think he's been devoured by the game.
It's a great way to put it.
Yeah, but no, I don't get me wrong. I think he's an absolute freak. How he understands television. Mm. He understands television so beautifully. And Fatty, well, I dealt with him. Sterlo, he's sort of the same as Fatty. You know, they both love a punt, and they both love their golf.
Mm.
Yeah.
You were saying before you don't get to play much golf anymore. Do you still like to have a punt in your time off?
Well, I love to have a punt, but you don't have to play golf to have a punt.
No, you don't. It was just because you were saying that Sterlo was a golfer and a punter.
Oh, but, no, I meant both of them. They like to have a punt on the horses and they love to have a punt on the golf, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Do you have any stories around of some punting? You and Ray used to play golf a bit, didn't you? Or was he making that up or am I making that up?
Well, I think he makes it up a few times, you know. There's a great old theory, you know, you don't spoil a good story by telling the truth. But we played a lot together, yeah, against each other and all the rest of it, and Sterling was a part of that. My shoulders, again, there are things that are inevitable, and my shoulders, they got weaker and weaker and the ball didn't go as far, you know. I actually hit the ball backwards one day. So I don't know why we're bogging down on golf. I mean, I wasn't much good.
Well, yeah, I know you liked it. I remember when I was it was the first day I think I was working at Triple M and they were like, Ray's on the show. And I was like, holy shit, Ray Warren. And I would have to call you before the show and talk you through the thing you're talking about. And you were on the golf course and you'd be like, hold on a second, son. And you'd put your phone down and then you'd go and I just hear a ball smack in the background. And then you come back. I'm like, how'd you hit it? And you're like, no, I smashed it. You nailed it. And then, we'd go on talking about the show. So, I mean, I knew you did enjoy your golf, but I just,
yeah.
Yeah, it's disappointing. The shoulders have gone, you know,
they had
failed you.
Yeah, they had they had a commandment there that you'd be there an hour before the show. I too busy playing golf, mate. I can't be there for a production meeting. So you'd ring up and I'd say, hang on, I've just got a 6-foot putt here and I'll come back. And that was our production meeting. Yeah.
Have you ever owned a horse?
No, never. No, I syndicated one for a friend of mine. Couldn't pick its feet up. And all I got was criticism from the syndicators. There were five in the syndication, and I was, if you like, the self-appointed manager.
Yeah.
So I wasn't an owner, no. But, oh, dear, oh, dear. You can train horses and do all that. You can syndicate horses, but you can't train the owners. You know, they all think they're buying Tullock. They all think they're buying Winx.
Yeah.
It's not Winx.
No.
It's a very slow horse. And we finished up selling it to Macau. I think they paid a total of $60,000 our dollars, and we sold it to Macau for about $10,000.
Okay.
So
a prudent investment.
We couldn't get it to run a place in a barrier trial. True story, though.
What was it called?
What do they call it? I don't know. It was a red Tony. It was a red Tony. I'll never forget that. There was a sire. I don't know what they called it. I can't remember. But we had to run a place in a barrier trial so that we'd be able to sell it to Hong Kong or Singapore or Macau. And my trainer, or the trainer, he rang me up. He said, there's five in this trial today. He said, we'll be running a place. I said, how do you work that out? He said, they're all my horses. They're all my horses, and they're all my track work riders, and they know what we have to do. We have to get this red Tony to run a place. It still couldn't run a place. With all the help in the world, it still couldn't run a place.
Oh, God.
Mate, good Lord.
We appreciate your time. We will get you. We'll let you out of here in just a second. Just a couple of things before we let you go.
I've had a birthday while I've been here.
Well, happy birthday, mate.
Yeah, happy birthday. Yeah. How does it feel having a documentary made about you? Is it Calling Time, Ray Warren, on Channel 9? This is coming out on Friday night. That must be a bit surreal.
Yeah, surreal is one word. The trouble is I can't have a conversation with you about it because I'm only expecting rather than knowing what's in it. Some guys have been working their butt off, Alex Rolls and Liam Berkery, and they've been on the road, and Liam has been the editor and Alex the producer. I'm aware of all of that, but I haven't any knowledge of what's in it, other than I would suspect there'll be something to do with Warren calling a time. In other words, I think it'll go back through my childhood and it'll make its way up to my career. But from what I'm told, those that have been able to watch some of it, it's apparently quite good.
Yeah, and will you watch that at home with the family? Is that...
Absolutely, yeah. I've got no... Where would I go to watch it?
Well, I don't know. They could be throwing you a party.
Ask them to put it on at the pub.
Yeah. Somebody said to me, where are you going to watch the grand final? I said, well, at home, in my lounge, you know. Don't get me wrong, I can go to the football, no problem, but I'd rather not have to worry about taking my car, finding a car park and all of that sort of stuff. Yeah. So I'll sit in the lounge and watch it there.
We're gonna watch it in the studio, so you're more than welcome to join us.
Yeah, you can come down to our studio if you want and see
if you want.
No, I'd rather stay at home.
Fair call.
No, I'm quite comfortable in my own company.
No,
yeah.
That's fine.
No, but I thought I'd...
It'd
be rude not to offer.
No, well, it'd be rude not to say thank you, but I'll be okay. Yeah.
Okay. So one thing before we go. So there was a moment for me, Rabs, where I just want to make sure that you didn't hear this, but I was one morning, I'd woken up after a large night and... I was sort of popping my head out of the bathroom and I was talking to someone else that I was living with and I was detailing some events that had happened the night before, all legal but a little salacious and, you know, I was just detailing them to this person quite loudly and then I've gone and picked up my phone and you're on the phone and it's answered and I can see it like ticking over and I'm like, holy shit, what is going on here? And it's gone through to your voicemail, I assume. And so I realize that this detailed sort of reenactment of the night before has been recorded on your voicemail. I never heard anything about it from you, and I assumed that you hadn't heard it, but I just wanted to make sure that you hadn't heard a voicemail from me that went for like 15 minutes.
That's how long it took you to tell the story. I've forgotten. Was there a question?
Take that as a no.
I take that as a no.
No, I didn't hear it. Otherwise, you would have heard from me.
Okay, yeah. Good. It was one of the more terrifying moments of my life.
Yeah, we've been talking about it for years. Yeah, going, I wonder.
It's good to know.
Yeah. No, I didn't get that.
Oh, good.
Mind you, I don't get modern technology. I'm hopeless. Really hopeless.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just never wanted to keep up, and I haven't kept up. And my mobile, I'll say to my wife or my daughter, I'll say, for God's sake, what have I done here, you know? And, oh, it's just absolute pain. And they say, oh, go online and do this and go online and do that. Go online? What do you mean go online? What's the telephone number? You know, give me a telephone number. And then there's all these ads that we do, you know, go to tomberminghamcom.au. What do you mean? I can't even use the computer. What's your telephone number?
Just give the telephone.
Yeah, no, just give the telephone. Yeah. Well, mate,
thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time. It genuinely has been an honour to have you on the podcast and to have, you know, been able to work with you over the years. Congratulations on everything, and good luck, you know, with the mowing of the lawns and the cleaning of the pool and everything else.
Pruning of the roses.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Landmines.
Yeah, the landmines.
You forgot the dog landmines. Yeah, that's my major job. But, it's been nice talking to you. You know, we had a lot of time together, Tom, didn't we? You know, and I got to thank you for getting me out of the studio one day when I had some kind of a turn. I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
But you were there, and between you and young Mark, you got me to hospital, but they still can't find out what's wrong with me.
That was bizarre, wasn't it?
Well, I've forgotten, to tell you the truth. I'd actually forgotten I was in the studio.
Yeah, that was what was weird. You were like, "What? Where am I?" Yeah. And you're like, "What's going on here?" And we were like showing you the paper and giving you the time and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, the specialist, after they'd run all the tests, said, "We can't find anything wrong with you, but you had too much on your mind. Your mind or your brain was trying to process too many things at the same time, and that's what brought it on."
Tell you what, a computer might help you with that. You can download a couple of your thoughts onto the computer and sort of clear the mind a little bit.
You're a typical Birmingham, aren't you?
Thank you very much,
Ray. Thank you, Ray. Appreciate it, mate. Enjoy retirement.
Beautiful.
My pleasure.
Could you two just not talk anymore?